my mouth.
No, what am I saying?
What, this? It's nothing. Really, it's nothing, Ed. It's just, it's just Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
Have a good time. Make sure your seatbelts are fastened.
Okay, you little bastards. The time has come. The moment we've all been waiting for. It's the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Let's go.
We've been ready to go for, well, I don't know, for a couple hours. We were excited to get in here today. Speak to the masses, for crying out loud. The minority that you are.
I'd say we've been ready for about 25 years now, so we're primed.
Yeah, I would say that's true as well. The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve, welcome to the podcast, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, hey, what do you know? We got a website. It's called thevocalminority.net, and we have social medias. Oh, boy, do we have social medias. We're on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Threadit, kind of, Facebook, and
Blue Sky.
Prominently featured. Oh, Blue Sky. I always freaking forget Blue Sky.
Yeah. Yeah.
The apparent liberal version of TikTok out there. So, or Twitter. Sorry.
But what were you saying? What's our bit? Where are we big and prominently displayed?
Oh, right there. That thing. See what I'm pointing at? Okay. Really American Media. You can find us on that thing as well. We've joined the big leagues, the resistance, gone international. A lot of people in Australia love us, Nick. Fun fact.
Yeah, that's right, dude. It makes me want to visit even more, dude. So hopefully we can get down that way.
Yeah. I was discussing with Kennedy recently, like, so where are we going next time? She was like, well, where have you always wanted to go? I was like, well, Australia. She's like, that is literally the furthest place away that we could possibly go to after us lamenting 25 hours of travel time. So I would still like to go to Australia, but I'm wide open for any place that loves us. We are big in Belgium.
Belgium would be great, too. You know, Rachel always tells me that, you think about Australia, and that's great, but it is a long ways away. I don't know that she's afraid of, like, the bugs and the snakes and all that stuff. And I was like, I'm just going to pretty much stay in, like, the big city, Sydney. You know, like, I just want to go to the big areas. I don't need to go in the bush, per se.
You don't want to go in the outback? I don't know what the point of going there is, then, for the Sydney Opera House.
Sure. Yeah, Sydney Opera House, and I like the challenge of being able to understand their people, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. All right.
So,
well, anyone listening to us worldwide, we do appreciate you, and we do have dots all over this big globe of ours. So, yeah, find those social medias, and contact us there or through the website.
Yeah.
What do you know?
We're still paying for a phone line, 844-48-VOCAL. Get vocal, dude, or we're just going to take it away from you, okay? Okay.
I like when we threaten the audience.
That's I do good. Too, dude. Come on. Use it or lose it. That's what they say about shit.
That's true. Yeah, so nowadays we're doing two shows a week. Every Friday you can catch us live on Really American, and that is our politically centered sort of show because politics is crazy nowadays, and we're talking about it. But this is what we're, calling our fun show, our pop culture show, our conversational human being type show.
Yeah, I feel like if we call it a fun show, then people won't think our Friday show is fun. So, you know, but this is the one where we can relax a little bit. On Fridays, we have to be very factual. I can lie to you on this program. I can tell you my penis is bigger than it is, and I would never say that on a Friday show. So that's the difference, okay?
Yeah, well, the New York Times can't fact check that one on you, but our political stuff can be. So,
yeah.
But yes, it is the fun show. And Nick and I did just travel the world and got to see all sorts of different types of people out there. I will say that trip did make me question the concept of American exceptionalism. I know we're a great country and I know we have some good things going on here, but we also have a ton of bad things going on here. And when I do travel like that, I start to see, like, is that country really different than us, worse than us? Are we really better than them? And I find that to be highly debatable.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you talk about is when we talk about other countries, you always talk about, like, you know, everyone loves America for our pop culture, you know, movies, yes, music, stuff like that. Well, here's the good news, dude. They have so many other things right in other countries. So, and I can catch all the music and movies from there, from here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's fair. And it does show you, too, in a lot of ways, people are people. Although I have to say, and maybe this is just where we were or how I observed life, but I did not see a lot of obese people in Europe. And specifically where we were in Greece, I saw a lot of beautiful people.
Yeah.
Is that just me picking and choosing, or do people seem, you know, not overweight and better looking?
It's kind of funny, dude. Now, I didn't think about it. I mean, obviously, I thought about, like, this country is full of beautiful people. But they aren't all beautiful. But the ones that are beautiful are freaking beautiful. You're right, though. I don't remember seeing a lot of overweight people. And when I did see them, they were Americans visiting, you know?
Yeah. When we finally got back to Chicago, you know, the airport anyways, I immediately noticed the difference. Bunch of overweight people walking around this airport where I did not see that for 2 weeks.
Well, think about this, dude. This is the first time I'm thinking about this. There was at least two or three times during the 2 weeks we were there in Greece where somebody at a restaurant said, "Hey, big boy," or, you know, like commented that I was a bigger person, or like, you know, oh, when we went out to dinner the first night, I asked the waiter, like, "Will you help me pick out my food? Like, I want to eat what you would eat." And he was like, "Yeah, you and I have something in common," and started rubbing his belly. So, like, they commented on that shit where I don't get that in America because I'm just one of the many, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure. And I did notice, they say people in Europe will never ask you what you do for a living. No, nobody asked me once, neither of us. I didn't hear any of us get asked that. And we were chatting with locals here and there, and yeah, no one ever asked that question.
Yeah, which is so funny, dude. Does that make you think we've got a broken and bent, what do they call, burnout culture? Is that what they say?
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I mean, none of our identities should necessarily be tied to what we do for a living, but I do think it tells you a lot about a person. I usually am curious what somebody does, but yeah, no one asked, and I didn't ask anyone there either. Didn't want to stand out like a sore American thumb.
Right. It's funny that you mention it because I don't think Rachel would mind me sharing this. Like, I know that she's been going through in therapy as of late. Just had the question in mind, like, I'm trying to figure out where my life is. If I take that I'm a lawyer away and my work and my what I do for a living, if I take it away, who am I? And she's really kind of questioned it because we do wrap so much identity into what we do, you know?
Yeah. There's a point of that that is good. We all want to embrace our careers and be proud of it. Those of us that have actual careers we've been trying to build up, not just jobs we've been having. So I get that, but it is really unhealthy. You know, I mean, when we were in Seattle and we lost this talk show 20-something years ago, yeah. I was miserably depressed because I felt like I lost my identity, everything I was. I was the guy on the radio.
You're right.
And that's a pretty crappy way to look at your life and your existence.
It is. Yeah. No, I struggle when Rachel says that. To me, you're so much more than that. Like, that's not number one on my list. But for her, you know, she's questioning it right now. And I think a lot of us would do that if we step back and was like, this is gone tomorrow. What's my conversation at a cocktail party? You know, like, you're right. We do. We substitute it. Weather and job. Like, this is how we small talk. This is how we get to know each other.
Let me ask you a question. Literally, I discussed in therapy today. You know, you and I spent 27 consecutive years on the radio, and now we're not on the radio. And part of me feels weird about that, like sad or like, I don't know, the end of an era or something like that. But it's completely messed up. I mean, aside from the whole, like, your identity is not your job thing, the fact that you and I have evolved, we have transitioned, so we're not on a local radio station anymore, but now we are on global, you know, podcast entities, whether it's our own platform or when we're on Really American, like, we're still on the air, we're still doing the same art form for the most part, but now we got a camera staring at us. Other than that, we have evolved, yet for some reason, I'm like, geez, I'm not on the radio anymore. Should I be ashamed?
No, dude. Listen, I feel the same way, and I think I've put a lot of thought into this. I think one of the reasons is because when we were on the radio, like, that was a thing that very few people could do. Now we're in this podcast world, and anyone literally could start it tonight. Whether it's good or bad, they could be in the same airwaves that we are. Like, right. It used to be so special. Like, oh, you're on the radio?
Yeah, no, that's fair. So, I don't know. Ponder all that, people. My point is, of the travels abroad, people are strange. People do look different. People do act different. But everybody's got annoying habits. I still came across rude people in Europe and people that were loud or obnoxious or whatever it was. And I stumbled across this article here about rude habits that you don't know you're doing. Or that's what the article claims. I would assume you probably are well aware you're doing these things, but maybe you just don't care.
It'd be crazy if this was a list of shockers, you know, that we're so self-unaware that, like, oh my gosh, I do that. Maybe there'll be one or two, but hopefully not the whole list.
Yeah, well, let's run through it. The first one here is something that has come up in the dating world of late. In my recent years of being out dating again, that this is a red flag if somebody is dismissive of service workers. And maybe dismissive is a little generous. I'm talking about if you're actually rude and, you know, overtly dismissive towards not only the waiter or the waitress, but the barista or the guy at the hardware store or whatever.
Yep, janitor, all any service worker.
Yeah. And I have told both of my kids right now are working at restaurants for the summer. And my firstborn is already aware of this because they've done it a few other summers. But my son, this is his first time working at a restaurant, which means you're interacting with the public, which is something you and I have had to do in some levels of our careers in radio, like when we do events. But for the most part, our workday is spent behind closed doors in studios. We don't have people just walking in off the street. And when you do work in that kind of business, you meet the worst people in the world.
Yeah. At least, you know what I can say is I'm glad that we both have done it, because I think it sets you up for this kind of job to still be able to understand, like, yeah, I was treated poorly in that job. I'll never do that to somebody, you know, like, I know how hard it is or whatever. So.
Totally. No, I agree. And I think it's a good experience to have had. I worked in a factory. I think that's a good experience. Having said that, I don't ever want to go back to either of those jobs. And I like working in a studio.
So. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, the article points out that we all have bad days, but that's not an excuse to be impatient or rude with your barista or talk down to the grocery store cashier, ignore the person bussing your table. So I don't know, people, even if you're faking it to look like a good, decent human being, be nice to all of those people we just mentioned.
100%. You know, it's funny that we were just talking about our travels and how different we can be culturally. When we left one of our destinations, we were getting ready to get on the ferry, and I was in line. The people in front of me were from Germany. They were berating this ticket taker. She was a girl from Greece.
Are you sure? Germans always sound angry. They could be complimenting someone. No,
they were speaking in English, and I understood every word of it, but they were from Germany. And they were just I was like, at one point, I was like, I've got to get on this ferry, dude. Please hurry. Like, if you're going to be raider, do it quickly. But they just kept going. So after they left, I said, you know, like, that was unreasonable. Like, you're doing a good job. That's not an easy job. You know, I kind of gave her a little pep talk, and she immediately was like, thank you for saying that. Like, I don't know what they were talking about. That happens for people in the service industry every day. So freaking be nice, dude.
Yeah, no, for sure. My son, he's working at a pizza place up at the lake for the summer, and he's kind of bussing tables and running food out from the kitchen, just being a general helper. And I don't remember what it was, but he was telling me some customer had a complaint, like the items were wrong on the pizza or something, where my son was like, oh, yeah, no, that's a problem. Let me fix that for you. So he went back to the kitchen and told the boss, you know, issue over here. And so the boss went over to that table and went off on the customer, you know, blaming the customer or, you know, whatever it was. And, yeah, berated the customer, left. When the customer walked out of the restaurant, he pulled my son aside and gave him $5 and said, I'm sorry, you got to work for that a-hole. And
then wow.
Walked on out.
Is he an a-hole all the time? Was that a bad day for him? Like, that's freaking crazy, dude.
Who knows? I mean, it should be a pretty short list of times you're going off on the customers, especially if your coworker, my son, was like, oh, no, we messed this up. Let me fix it for you.
Right. It's good that he knows that level of customer service already. Wow.
Well, good human.
Yeah, you're doing it.
All right, next thing on the list, things that, you know, habits you have that you don't know are actually rude. And this one is always evolving and is highly debatable. Using your phone in social settings. You know, I think if you're in a social setting and you're sucked into your phone, if you're ignoring those around you, then obviously that's weird. Hmm. I don't think it's bad to be checking on your phone. I don't think you have to scroll through Instagram or something, but checking on text or something, like, I totally get that. And I also think if your phone does ring, a text does come through, maybe you see a news alert you want to read more about, I think it's fine if you tell the people around you, like, hey, I don't want to be rude. Just I need 2 minutes to check my phone or something.
It's interesting that you took this from the list this way, because I immediately went to, yeah, it's freaking rude when people are watching TikTok with no headphones on, or I hate people talking on speakerphone. I thought about cell phone etiquette more than just like being on my phone around people. But everything you said's right, dude. I mean, there's some level of, hey, I got to check this, you know, just be polite about it, I guess.
Yeah. The people on speakerphone I find funny, because a lot of people say that. It drives me nuts when somebody's sitting next to me on speakerphone. But what if that person was not on the phone, if they were just sitting there? They'd still be talking to each other and you could hear it.
They would. It would not be nearly as loud or annoying having to hear the person come through that speaker. You know, like, it's just, it's a whole different vibe, dude. I've heard that argument before. It doesn't stand up.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't know. Yeah, there are scenarios where I think it's become certainly much more acceptable. But, yeah, don't be a slave to your phone. But, you know, I really hate it when I'm at, like, a restaurant and I see everyone at a table on their phone. And there's occasionally times where me and my kids will sit down and everyone check. I'm like, and I just realize we look bad. I know we're all not talking or something because we're on our phones. Like, we're, you know, I know we're all just going to check and be done, but it still looks bad. And totally. It drives me a little nuts.
But because, you know, you're thinking about people must be looking at us thinking, those pathetic people, dude, they're with each other and have nothing to talk about.
Right. So then we go out of our way to be harmonious and bonding for the rest of the time. But
yeah.
But yeah, careful about being on your phone too much. How about this one? I'm not picking on anybody with this, but being chronically late.
Chronically late.
I'm not saying
late.
Anyone I know in particular is chronically late, but things happen.
Who? Your kids? Who's sure. late? Yeah, your kids? The red-haired one? Specifically?
I'm talking about you.
I'm never late, dude. I, you know what? Listen, we've talked about this before. 5 minutes or even stretching closer to 10 is not late.
Well, this is, it's in the eye of the beholder. Like, to me, are, as radio guys, are taught top of the hour is top of the hour. Mm. You don't start at 3:05. Yeah, that's 5 minutes of silence there. So yeah. I don't know. I've always been chronically on time, but radio taught me to be extremely on time. And it's funny because for the first 26 years of you and I on the radio together, you were never late. You were always on time.
Yeah.
But now that we're not on the radio, and I think there's a built-in flexibility, now the definition, I think, is expanded.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm not annoyed by it. I've just noticed it.
Oh, you're talking for this podcast in particular?
Yeah. We're recording at 3. Right. We tend to drift in around 3:05, 3:10, and, you know, babble for a few minutes. We're recording by 3:20. Like.
Yes. You're 100% right. Now that we are not on the radio, that time does 5-10 minutes, you know. I mean, when it comes to this podcast, sometimes 15, you know, that requires a check-in. You are on time for the most part, most of the time. I, in my personal life at home, am terrible at being on time, like right on the dot. And when I do make it, I'm just like, look at me, dude. Like, I've really done something special today.
You want credit for something you're supposed to do? I think Chris Rock is a bit about that, but I will not recite.
So yes. Funny. I get it. That is rude, and it's also annoying that I'm late. So, yeah, I get it. I know it. Well, it hasn't changed my behavior.
Two sides to that coin, though. Like, I may be a little too anal about being on time. Like, you know, most normal people do have that 5 to 10 minute buffer, but not necessarily this podcast, but if I'm showing up somewhere, if it's even 3:02 and I'm supposed to be there at 3, I feel bad. I will have already texted you running 2 minutes late.
Yeah.
And maybe that's nice to me. Other people might be thinking, like, what, you obsessive freak, 2 minutes is not late.
It's so funny because you did that to me when we were on vacation. You were like, 4 minutes out. Really sorry. I was like, 4 minutes, dude. You're fine. Come on.
There was one time we left you sitting down there for a couple of minutes. I felt terrible. I was like, you know, speed walking. I've been there for 2 minutes. Come on. We can't just let people sit there and wait for us.
Yeah. I don't care about that stuff only because I do it to other people, I suppose. But it's rude.
Right. I do have an adult child in my life nowadays who does seem to be chronically late for work. And I don't know how to say this, but it bothers me on some level, you know, not so much about them, just the concept of if you're supposed to be at work at 3 o'clock, whether it's radio or not. I was like this delivering pizzas. Like if your shift starts at 5, you should be there by like 4:50, 4:55. Showing up at 5 is late if you're supposed to be, unless you walk in and go right to work. Like,
Yeah,
be there on time. Like,
I agree with that. And I think that I think it goes more towards when you're working a job like that, how much do you care about your job? Because if you're just there for the paycheck and like, this is not for me, I think you're going to be late a lot of the time. When I was delivering pizzas as an adult, dude, every day I said, oh, I'm going to leave with plenty of time today, because every day for me was running out of the house and like racing and in traffic, like, come on, you know, and walking in 1 minute late or right at the hour. You know, that's no way to live. But I hated that job.
Right. No, I'm sure that's got something to do with it. The other thing I've noticed in my life, there's been, I think, one time where I lived within like 5 minutes of where I worked. And I was constantly late, because when I lived a half hour, an hour away, I was pretty chronic about leaving an hour early, and that made buffer. But when it's 5 minutes down the road, I was always late. And even nowadays, like my therapy used to be an hour away from me, but now I live in that town. It's 5 minutes down the road. I go running in there 1 minute before all the time. I just can't get it into my brain that even though it's close, you still got to give a buffer.
It's funny, when I worked for you for KRLT, you know, I'm working from home. My studio is right down from my house. I did the same shit, dude, where like, oh, I'm on the air in 5 minutes. I should probably head down. You know, I still got to turn my computers on, you know, and everything. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, speaking of being on the radio and doing a podcast, next rude thing you may not realize you're doing is monopolizing the conversation. Which, I say that because you and I are talkers for a living. I really don't do that socially. I have to consciously try to be a big part of the conversation. But I don't know. It's a pretty short list of people I've ever hung out with that truly monopolize it. But when it happens, I do find it annoying.
Oh, yeah. It's really annoying. I don't hang out with people that – well, that's not true. I have some friends that one of them in the relationship – does that when they're drunk. They just monopolize a conversation and speak loud, and it's mostly boring, you know, because they're so drunk. I don't think that that's anyone I would normally hang out with, you know, like, oh, I give it a pass because you've had too much to drink. Like, I get it. But yeah.
Do you ever think, like, I don't need, it's nice that they won't shut up. I don't need to contribute. I'm just going to sit here and stare into nothingness because I'm apparently not part of this conversation.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have that much self-control, and I can see you doing it. You'll give a quick couple of smiles and nods, and that's, you stay out of the conversation. I've seen you do it before, but I don't have that much self-control. I mean, at some point, I usually end up being like, enough already, dude. I have to call you out.
Yeah, no, that's fair. We talked about this on the political side recently, that Bill Maher, when he went and met with Donald Trump, I really feel like he got duped, because Bill Maher said, you know, we had an equal conversation. He didn't just talk about himself the whole time, whereas multiple people warned him, Trump will just dominate the conversation. He will talk about himself. I've heard other celebrities talk about how annoying he is to have dinner with because he won't shut the hell up. So I think Bill Maher got duped because Trump didn't do any of that stuff. But he's notorious for doing it, and I think it's on a long list of reasons why he would be annoying to hang out with.
Yes, 100%. And Bill Maher 100% got duped, dude. I mean, from him not talking about himself to him saying, like, you have great ideas, like becoming somewhat friendly with him. Like, he completely got duped.
Yep, I agree. All right, moving on. Habits that you don't know you're doing that are rude. If you don't know that you're doing this, and if you don't know you're rude, you might be some sort of sociopath. Cutting in line. Do people do this and think that's okay or normal or not pay attention to the fact that they've just cut in line, whether it's at a movie theater, Starbucks, or Disney World?
100%, dude. You know where the biggest victims are? Are in waiting to board the plane. Okay, so you remember, you know, they rush up there, and you're already standing in one place, and you'll see a line start to funnel in front of you. Like, yeah. That is the worst place to do it. I don't cut in line. I even have a hard time being like, hey, Rach, go stand in line. I'll go get this, and then I'll, you know, meet you in line. And coming into line, the person behind me looks, and it's like, I didn't know there were two people in front of me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, those cutters at the airport are crazy, and it makes me so angry that I will box them out, you know, physically. I'll get into it a little bit. It bugs me.
Yeah, I am not a line cutter. I will do the save the line place. I think that's perfectly acceptable. But yeah, the aggressive merging or the sort of passive aggressive merging that happens when you're like, oh, I'm not letting you in here. I'm squeezing you out.
Completely. You know, the person, the group standing next to me, they're like totally ignoring me, but I know they're staring at me to get in front of me, and they're having conversation with each other and like slowly moving in front of me. Like, I see what you're doing. It's not going to work.
Yeah. We had a little incident in the, I think it was the Vienna airport. You know, when we came home, we had flights canceled. And so there was a couple of airports we were like sprinting through and rushing to get there. We got to the gate in Vienna, and they were starting to do a line to get, you know, to get people boarding or whatever. And we were rushing. We just got our boarding pass. And I noticed there was a line, a gap, a woman standing there, and then people standing behind her. And at first, I walked in front of her because there was a gap. And then I noticed, like, there's a whole line behind this woman. So I turned to the woman. I was like, I'm sorry, are you in line here? And she says, yes. Yes, I am. I'm like, oh, my bad. So I went behind her, and I got back in the back of the line. For the next minute, the line in front of this woman kept moving forward. The gap kept getting bigger, and she never moved. And I walked back up to her, and I was like, I'm sorry. Are you sure you're in line? There's a whole gap going here, and you're confusing everyone behind you because we don't know if we're in line or not.
Right.
She looked at me so annoyed. It was like, ugh. And then she just walked out of line and stood against the wall. I don't think she was in line at freaking all.
No, she wasn't, dude. That is so evil that she was doing that. That kills me.
I stared lasers at her for the rest of the time. Just like, do you see us all? We're in line. Right. What are you... God, you got a boarding pass. Screw you.
So crazy, dude.
So, yeah, don't cut in line. It's insane.
No cutsies.
How about this? Not respecting people's personal space. This is tough. I mean, if you're a close talker, like the old Seinfeld bit, like, yeah, that's annoying. But I don't know how often people are really disrespecting my personal space. The article says the amount of space one needs can vary from person to person and culture to culture. But getting in someone's face or bumping into them without at least acknowledging it is universally rude. Like, yeah, sure. If you're making contact, sure. But otherwise, I guess it depends how well you know the person as to how close they can get to you.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good way to look at it. My brother is a close talker. He's very loud and he's a close talker. And I mean, he'll get right down in your ear where he's talking. And I'm just like, back up, dude. He's the only person in my life that I know that to be that way. Otherwise, culturally is a great point. Like, I notice all different cultures have different ideas of what personal space is. And, you know, if their population is huge, sometimes they're closer together in lines. You know, all that stuff comes into play. So that you got to respect that. I mean, that's how they grew up or whatever. But my brother, you should back up, dude. You should just back up 4 inches. It's going to be great.
I sort of think this is maybe one of the hidden advantages of COVID. Because I still go to a lot of stores where the line, they have those markers on the floor to separate us all as we had to during COVID.
Yep.
Yeah, and people still respect that in a lot of lines because there's still the markers on the floor. And I'm like, hallelujah. We do not all need to be crammed into this line together. So go ahead and assume I have COVID or Ebola and keep your 6 feet away from me. I'm cool.
Yeah. In fact, you should just say that. When someone's too close, just be like, hey, I have COVID and I'm, you know, trying my best here, but you're not helping. Yeah.
I watch a lot of the First Amendment audit videos online where people show up in public spaces and start recording other people. And they're doing it because it's legal. It's constitutionally protected, but people get pissy.
Yeah.
One of the things the upset people often do is they will walk right up to the camera guy and get right in their face.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in public, too. I'm in public, too. I can be right in your face. And the guy usually points out, like, you're not allowed to harass me and violate my personal space. Like, I can mace you now. Now you're actually breaking the law because you're harassing me.
Right.
And they never see it that way. But, yeah, there is some level of not only etiquette, but you actually are harassing somebody if you're going to get aggressively in their face and go, I'm not touching you. I'm 2 inches from you, but I'm not touching you.
Yeah, you're right. You can't do that to somebody. But it surprises me how many of those people come out and be like, you didn't get my permission to record, and that don't know the law of that. Like, it's not a crazy law. It's been like that forever.
Right, exactly. Moving on, things you may not realize you're doing that are rude. And I have to say, this came up on our trip multiple times. I don't feel bad for it, and nor am I admonishing or apologizing on behalf of any of the four of us, but I did notice it a lot, being loud in public spaces.
Mm.
There was one night at one of those restaurants in particular where a lot of people were dialed into everything we were talking about. I saw their reactions. I saw some eye rolls. Like, you and I have loud voices, and I think each of our significant others is naturally loud.
Yeah.
And Kennedy certainly acknowledges that she's loud in public, but there was that one night, whatever restaurant that I got that skewer hanging down from, two tables beside us just kept looking at us like, freaking Americans, take it down a notch.
Which restaurant was it?
It was night like two or three. I got that chicken skewer that hung down from my, it had a little.
Yeah.
And the next, or maybe it was our final night, that one woman, when Kennedy said that, dropped the F-bomb, and the woman at the table next to us starts repeating what she was saying. And I looked at her like, do we got a problem? And then she kind of giggled and winked. Like, I think she was trying to laugh it off, but she was annoyed with us.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, we're loud, and maybe on some level we should be conscious of that. Other levels, we're all adults out in public drinking, having fun, like, bite me.
That's the thing, dude. I think if there's drinks being sold where you are, like, I'm not saying you have to yell purposely, but if you're having a spirited conversation at a table and there's drinks flowing, I think it's completely acceptable. You could move if it's annoying you. I remember Rachel's family in general is the loudest people I've ever met in my life. Embarrassingly so, at like a Azteca or a Red Robin where you're just having lunch. You know,
right.
They would laugh so hard, they would talk so loud, and I would almost sink into my seat because I was embarrassed by it. But dude, you're right. If drinks are flowing, the volume's going to be turned up a little bit. Sorry.
Yeah. Read the room.
Yeah.
If it is some somber, silent restaurant, then okay, maybe be conscious of it. But it's a jam-packed restaurant on a Saturday night. Glasses are clanging. People are talking. Like, if we're a little louder than that table, no, I don't feel bad. If we're at a library or church or something, then
time and a place, dude.
Yeah, I agree. So, all right, moving on down the list here. Rude things you may not realize you're doing. Never saying thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a problem for me. I'm overtly polite about pleases and thank yous and all that stuff. But never saying thank you, yeah, I think that probably says something about you, right? A little entitled or selfish.
Sure. Yeah, entitled, have lost perspective on, saying thank you, dude. I mean, it's just something. You know what? I want to say it should come out your mouth.
Thank you.
Like just something that's automatic. You know what I mean? Think about this. People say, like, when you say I love you all the time to nauseam, it loses its meaning. Thank you is one of those things that, like, it's okay if it loses its meaning. Say thank you every time somebody does something for you. I think it's important, right?
Yeah. And can you say I love you too much? That's a tough one. So many societal families have been taught to never say it. Certainly men don't say it. And I've been taught repeatedly in therapy that you should be saying it as much as you can.
Yeah.
Never too much love. But, you know, I can tell Kennedy came from an upbringing where they probably didn't say it much because I've got about a 5-to-1 ratio going on.
What are you talking about? That you initiate or she does? When you say I love you, she doesn't always give you an I love you back?
No. And it's usually not a standalone. I mean, if it's we're having some either text exchange or conversation where maybe it's already come up and I've said it, that there's times, yeah, or I don't know, she says thank you or yeah, or I hear you or something. But certainly at first, when we first started using the love word, I was saying it way more. I was pulling it out of her.
Yeah, yeah. I will never leave anyone physically without telling them that I love them, you know, for obvious reasons. But yeah, I think it's something, I guess I was just brought up to say it a whole bunch. You made the comment that if you say I love you to Kennedy, at times she'll say thank you. I have to tell you that I saw that on a TV show, I don't know, maybe a year ago, that somebody responded that way. And it wasn't necessarily a bad thing coming from that person, but I was like, thank you. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Thank you. And then as I started to think about it a little bit more, like it is a somewhat nice response when you say, I love you. Well, thank you for loving me. You know, like I appreciate that. Expanding it, you know, so yeah, that's interesting.
No, I agree totally. It is about the context. And, you know, if the first time I said I love you to her and she said thank you and then moved on, you know, that'd be a little awkward, I suppose. But it's been well established at this point. And, yeah, expressing thanks is probably completely acceptable. And, yeah, we do use it a lot. In my house, it gets said 1,000 times a day. I mean, yeah. I will go in my son's room and be like, hey, dude, I'm running out in the garage if you need me. Like, all right, cool. I love you, Dad. Like, yeah. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's perfectly fine. I don't think we've worn it out.
Agreed.
But does everyone need to do it that much? Probably not.
Yeah. No, I agree. This makes me think, dude. Have I been saying I love you to people to hear it back? Because if I was just saying I love you to people, thank you would not seem weird to me. You know, if I was actually just telling you I loved you, am I saying it to hear it back? Maybe. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to think about that, dude.
Yeah, talk to your shrink. Get to the bottom of that. Mm-hmm. This next one's interesting. You know, rude things you may not know you're doing. Interrupting. Now, obviously, in a lot of scenarios, interrupting somebody, of course, is rude.
Sure.
However, much again, like on our trip, we're four buddies hanging out. I don't feel like everyone has to get complete sentences. Next person talks. Like sometimes a good conversation is people kind of jumping in and adding on or assisting. You know, like a healthy little back and forth and knowing when to, you know, let you chime in because I know you're going to give it right back to me. Like that's a sign of a close friendship.
Sure.
But yeah, it's overtly interrupting all the time. Sure. Of course it's rude.
This is how I look at conversation. Okay. If you and I are having conversation, for the most part, we should be on a highway. You know, a 2-lane highway. When we're in a group, we're at a roundabout, dude. You know, like just hop in when you can, you know, because that's what keeps a spirited, good conversation going. You know, if you step on me a little bit, it's completely different than if we were having a one-on-one.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, some interrupting is obviously, I think, a good flow, but it's somebody who's just doing it all the time is obnoxious. And this maybe is a little PTSD, triggers me of almost every fight I've had with any woman where I get accused of interrupting them because they go on some 4-minute filibuster covering 17 topics where at some point I'm like, I got to get in here. Like, am I part of this or not?
Right.
And I can't keep track now with the 7 things you already said that were wrong. Like at some point I feel, all right, I got to interrupt you. And I always get admonished for it, but I feel like I'm being tricked into it.
I think that's a guy thing. I mean, I do think it's a guy thing because I get it too. I get that same stuff and feel the same way. One thing, this is what you got to be careful with. We got to a point of unhealthy arguments at one point due to me because I was, when Rachel would start to talk, I would interrupt her because I knew what she was going to say or I felt like I did, you know. Because
you've been around it so long together, you just know where it's going.
Yeah, exactly. But that's me assuming, and that's really unhealthy way to have a conversation, right? So, you know, I had to step back from that. But I do feel like I'm just trying to make this short and concise. Like, we don't need to talk for all night here. Let me say what I'm going to say, you say what you're going to say, and then we can kind of tickle each other and we'll be good, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of relationships, what do you do when your person starts to tell you an anecdote that they've already told you before? Do you sit there and just smile and nod and let them tell the same story again? Or should you interrupt them and be like, hey, no, you told me that story. That's a great one. Like, do you interrupt them and stop them, or do you let them go?
It depends, okay? It depends how many times. Like, if it's once a year you do that, then I'll usually just let you go. And because I know that you want to tell you obviously want to tell the story, you know? Like, so I'll let you go. But if you're doing it all the time, you know, at some point I'll be like, I know. Like, we've had this conversation several times. I don't have much middle ground, you know?
Yeah. I was discussing this recently with Kennedy, and she pointed out that with me and with other people she knows, that sometimes she likes to let the anecdote be repeated because she wants to see if you're going to tell the story consistently or not.
Interesting.
Like, do you exaggerate? Do you take it a different – or are you telling me the same story 6 months apart, and now I know you're a consistent person?
Time out. For entertainment purposes, or is she trying to see if you're a liar?
I think it's more to see if you're maybe not a liar, but exaggerator, or, you know, yeah. Do you stick to your stories, or are you telling it differently each time for whatever reason?
That's interesting. That is. How do you feel about that, dude? Now that I know that about her, I'll be writing my shit down, dude, because my stories are always a little bit different.
Right. I think there's grace in there, you know, as to maybe if you exaggerate a little bit. But if you truly take stories in different directions each time, like, I don't know, that might be a little worrisome.
Yeah, that's interesting, dude. She's a bit of a detective. Kennedy's a detective, dude.
Yeah. How about this one? And then I'll be done with my list here. I started to tell her an anecdote that she told me. I told her her own anecdote. And I felt like such an idiot. And by the way, I didn't preface it as my anecdote. I just said, like, God, I was on a date once. I don't remember who it was with. But this woman started telling me this anecdote. And I start into it, and she stops me. She's like, that was me. That's my I was like, I felt like such an asshole.
Yeah, that, you know what, just out of being safe, your story should never start that I was out on a date with this woman.
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, this is a problem when you're at this age of life and you've had relationships. Like, I feel to some extent it's okay to say, my ex-wife and I were doing this once or
twice. Sure.
She's done that, you know, my ex and I, like, but you don't want to do it all the time. But yeah, God, I felt so dumb. But it was, I tried to explain it like, well, hey, it was a good anecdote. I was telling it to you. I thought it was so good. So nice job.
That's really funny. And you're dying inside.
Yes. No, I felt like a total a-hole, to say the least. So,
yeah.
There you go.
Oh, that's a good one. Welcome to the podcast, by the way. This is the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. I've got another list here that I'm going to go over. Did your son just get out of school, like have last day of school? Yeah.
Yeah. Freshman year of high school, done and over.
My niece had her last day. I guess it was just this past Friday. So, I thought to myself, are you excited for summer? Because we looked forward to summer, dude. I mean, I got depressed when summer was a week away from ending. You know, I used to get really melancholy because I love summer. I asked my
school days.
Yeah. I mean, I still love them today, dude. I do still love them today. And I do get sad when they end. But yeah, in school years, I asked my niece, you excited for your summer? And she was like, eh. I was like, what do you mean? You're going to be swimming. You're going to whatever you want. The world is your oyster. And she was like, I'm going to miss my friends. And like, she likes school enough. And I wonder, is that her thing or is that a kid thing? How'd your son feel?
I don't know if I can speak for all kids, but that was certainly not the case when I was back in those days.
Yeah.
And, that's tough. I mean, Cross was looking forward to the end of the year for sure. But he's got a full summer of football camps and everything else. So I don't think he's feeling that separation from the school world and friends and all that stuff. But no, I mean, similar to me, he's not some huge fan of school. He does it, but I don't know that he loves it.
Well, she didn't love it, but now I guess she's loving it, dude. So that was her response, and it just made me think, like, you know, I guess on many levels, kid summer today is different than a kid summer when we were kids. In fact, you know, a lot of things have changed. Then I come across this article that talks about popular trends that these younger generations are doing that us oldies are tired of seeing.
I'll have to interview some oldies to get their perspective on things.
Yeah, we're just a proxy. We're just sitting in for them, dude. But, you know, we're going to give the oldie opinion, okay?
All right. And I'll tell you if I've seen this trend amongst my kids or their peers.
All right. Let's see. I'll start off by saying my niece is, she just graduated sixth grade. So that's about the age she is, okay? This first one on the list is guess there's like an elementary school age kids with full skincare routines now. That's wild. Does that surprise you?
No. I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing. I mean, elementary, that's awfully young. I mean, by middle school, I even had skincare regimens because I had acne and didn't, you know, didn't like any of that stuff. But elementary aged, I mean, I know there are definitely some fashion savvy elementary age kids that I feel a little bad about.
Yeah.
Like, especially little girls. It's like the beauty pageant world. Like, you're kind of sexualizing somebody who's in the third grade. And that has to come from siblings or parents or something, usually.
For sure.
So on that level, yeah. But a skincare regimen at that age, I just don't know what the point is. They don't have acne yet. So that seems a little unhealthy.
Yes. I guess it's different for everyone because like you, I had, you know, I don't even know if I call it a skincare routine. I had a Buff Puff and, you know, a bottle of Clean and Clear, you know, to make sure my acne didn't flare up in high school. It wasn't much of a routine, but these, my niece who is, like I said, just, she'll be in seventh grade next year. She's got a skin routine where she goes in the bathroom before bed and she's in there for 35 minutes putting different serums and lotions and creams on her face.
Wow. And does their mother do that too?
Yep. Yep. And I think the reason she really got into it is because her older sister did it. And she did it more for reasons of acne. She got it a little younger. And I think she just kind of looked up to her. But yeah, everyone in the house does a skincare routine. So I guess it's where you grow up.
Yeah. I mean, on one level, she's being set up for good habits or something. You can make that case. But it sort of would feel to me like you're putting too much emphasis on your looks. And that is a slippery slope, to say the least.
Or just be, go play, go jump on that trampoline out there, dude, you know?
Right. I'll tell you, I have become very conscious of my skincare routine in the last several months because we're on camera so much nowadays. And I will admit, I haven't had to use it too many times, but I do have some makeup now. I had to go buy skin-colored makeup because if I get a blend, I don't want that on camera for thousands of people to see. So I'll put a little dab there. You don't notice it on camera. It's like every TV news anchor guy. You put a little, you know, makeup on. But I only do it when I have an actual blemish. And I don't know why. I'm almost 50, and I still struggle with that. So I have gotten a little better about washing my face with, you know, skincare stuff. I don't do skincare per se at the end of the day, but I do splash water on my face just, I feel, to get some of the oil and grease or whatever off. But I made a comment to Kennedy the other day that she looked at me a little sideways. I told her I am now changing my pillowcase every 2 days. I do not go more than 2 nights without changing my pillowcase. Because when I wake up in the morning, that thing is covered with saliva and oil and everything else. And since I started doing that, I have not had any noticeable blemishes.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I guess it would help, dude. But every two days. I mean, what, do you flip it one night, then wash it the next?
I'm not crazy, Dick. I let it go whatever side it's on for two nights.
All right.
But then, yes, every 2 nights now. How often do you change your pillowcase or sheets?
The goal is to change them once a week. Sometimes that, you know, stretches over into, I mean, I've gone 2 weeks before, but usually it's a week to a week and a half.
Yeah. See, I definitely do my whole sheets once a week, and it's gotten easier because when Kennedy comes and goes is usually when I clean our sheets because they get gross. But the pillowcase, I'm doing every 2 days. I don't care if the other sheets can stay there for a week, but pillowcase, no.
It's funny, dude. I just heard, you remember like a Mrs. Manners, or, you know, they told you how to do stuff back in the day. You can write into the paper. there's some Mrs. Manners of the internet. And I was telling my mom about it because I read an article and she said you should wash your pillowcase every 2 days. And I told my mom that. This is just recent. And I was like, that's crazy, right? And she was like, I mean, yeah, I do it once a week when I wash my sheets or whatever. But I don't know, fast forward to 2 weeks later, she was like, I just can't get that out of my head that I'm supposed to be doing that every 2 days. I was like, yeah.
Well, Miss Manners and Mr. Harness are on the same page because it's helped a lot. That's all I'm saying.
It's a new trend. So there is your health and beauty tips here on the Vocal Minority. This is an all-around show. This is a list of popular trends among younger generations that older adults are officially sick of seeing. Let's see if we agree. Young people seek information by watching TikTok content rather than Googling the answer. If you have a lot of time to spare, you'll often get good info. But I'm middle-aged. I've always been a big reader. I'll do almost anything to avoid having to watch stuff or listen, for that matter, when I can more quickly visually skim and immediately determine if the info is relevant.
I mean, I feel like that's splitting hairs. If you're going to the internet to get answers, which is perfectly acceptable nowadays, I mean, it seems more time intensive. And there may be a topic. I mean, don't get me wrong. If I'm looking up, you know, how to change the water pump on my KTM. Like, yeah, I want a YouTuber to, I want to watch somebody do it to get the answer.
Sure.
But if I just want to know what year is the Declaration of Independence signed, like, I'm not going to go watch a video to get the answer.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I guess, you know, like, I'll go to TikTok for information a lot of the time if I heard it, you know, a headline of a news story, or even if, you know, I'll do this oftentimes. I don't have a membership to the New York Times, so I can't read their freaking stories, but I get their headlines. Sometimes I'll take that headline and search it in TikTok so I can go watch a video on it. I will do that. You know, and everyone absorbs information differently, whether you read it in print or, you know, you need to auditorily hear it or see it. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. Funny, quick side fact to what you just said there. I recently, honestly, my dad got a subscription to the New York Times. And there's some option, I think, for like an extra dollar a year, you can add on an extra family member or something. So he gave me the other account.
Nice.
So now I do have access to the Times, which is, I have had the same problem you do. When we're doing show prep, you click on it, you know, you're out of free article. I hate it.
Yeah.
So it's been really nice. And I have actually been reading the New York Times. But here's the funny thing. Both you and Kennedy are big on Wordle, which is on the New York Times.
Yeah.
And occasionally I start to feel guilty of like, yeah, you guys do Wordle a lot. I know that challenges your brain. I should really try harder. But the other day I had the realization, I'm reading the New York Times every day. I'm not playing the games. Like, which is actually better for my brain, to be informed on current events or to try to dissect what five-word frickin' mystery word today it is?
Oh, are you saying Kennedy and I are uninformed?
Well, no, both of you are not. But as a general rule, what is better for the brain, to play the games every day or to read the actual articles in the Times every day?
I don't have to answer that question because I do both, dude. Yeah, I don't exactly have to answer it.
We're informed people.
Yeah, we're very informed.
I start to feel dumb, though, with Wordle. That's really the problem. Some days I nail that thing. Others, when I get anxiety when I get to that like fourth or fifth guess. Like, I will feel like a terrible human if I cannot figure this out.
It's coming down. Yeah. You'll get better. If you play consistently, you'll get better at it. Yeah, I mean, excuse me. That's the reason, the initial reason for me wanting to do Wordle, other than I think it's kind of fun and challenging, is to keep my brain spry. But I found that it's also teaching me rules about the English language that I just haven't thought about in a long time. So when I go to put a word together, I know I'm learning better what are my choices, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I started doing Wordle for that reason. Like, I'm going to work out my brain every morning. I didn't think I needed it. But now that I have failed at Wordle repeatedly, I feel like I'm a moron that definitely needs it. It's made me feel worse about myself. So I think I'm compensating by saying, like, well, I'm reading the article, so look at me.
Yeah. No, I guess it's not for everybody. You know, I love Wordle. What up, Wordle? So yeah, watching your information versus reading your information. I think if you watch your information, if you're listening to someone else tell you that, you should at least then jump on and go fact check it, because there's so much bullshit out there in video form, you know?
Sure. What about this new trend of both? Captions on videos. It drives me nuts. I don't want them, but so many people watch videos with only captions. And I've learned that because we don't do it on ours. And I've had people comment, why don't you guys have captions? I want to read this. And honestly, Kennedy half the time will have the subtitles on, like watching Netflix. And she likes it. Drives me a little nutty, but it's definitely a new trend.
Yeah, that's funny because it used to drive me nutty. Rachel always wants the subtitles on when we're watching, you know, Netflix or whatever. It used to drive me a little nutty. Now, maybe I'm getting older and I have a harder time distinguishing words in a loud environment, and I like them now.
That's so funny. I find myself reading ahead is the problem.
Ah,
because the words are usually ahead of what's being spoken. So I hate that I see what's about to be said.
Yeah.
And I hate it when they're like loud noise in the background. Like, I'm not. This started off as a service for deaf people. Now
right. Yes. Okay. These are popular trends among younger generations that older adults are officially sick of seeing. That they use their phones instead of laptops. This is an interesting one. I use my phone a bit, but it's hard to imagine it being my only computer. I need at least 20 inches of screen and a trackball, keyboard, physical buttons to think properly. Kids don't seem to need laptops. They just use their phone for everything, whether it's video editing or reading news stories.
That has definitely become a thing. My kids are not great at typing because they don't type a lot. Because either the screen stuff is different or they're just doing voice text or whatever it is. But
yeah,
I struggle with these things of what is wrong versus what's a sign of the times. Like, keyboards are going to go away. I remember a scene in the Star Trek movie, I think it was Star Trek 3 or something, when they traveled back in time and they went to California. This was the original cast, 80s movie. And when Scotty went to use the computer, he walked up and was like, computer, please pull up. And the person was like, you got to type. And he like held up the mouse and started talking into the mouse. And it was ha, 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 because in his day and age, why would you type on a keyboard?
Right.
So is Scotty correct to be with his current times? You don't do that? Or yes, is it a dying art form we should admonish people over?
I don't think we should admonish people, dude. I mean, whatever works for you is what works for you, I think. You know, do I need to have a computer? But I do a lot of stuff on my phone, you know.
Yeah, clearly. You can do almost everything on your phone, and I don't know if that's a bad thing. Yeah. You know, we do a lot of writing. I'm not writing a long-form thing on a phone, but
right.
The other stuff, yeah, it is what it is.
This is a list of things that kids do that old people are tired of, trends, that type of stuff. This guy says, I'm almost 28, and an 18-year-old I work with mentioned how guys ask for her Snap. I guess the days of asking for phone numbers are completely gone. I'm not too surprised because I prefer Facebook Messenger over my texting app, but it's a little weird that we don't get phone numbers.
That's got to be a generational thing. I mean, in my recent times of dating, not one person said, look me up on Snap, hit me up on IG Messenger. All of us adults were exchanging telephone numbers.
Yeah.
So I'm not used to that, but I do hear about so many people meeting on Instagram. He dropped into my DMs. We met that way. Like, it is common.
Yeah. I see it on TV a lot, like What's Your Snap or whatever, you know. But I also see people, give me your phone number. And they'll hand you their phone to give it to you, you know, like just enter it in for me. So I think people are still doing that. Maybe not young kids. But, again, they're not going to ask for your Snap. So what are you worried about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I certainly text plenty of people, but I'm in that category, I guess, where like, yeah, give me your telephone number so I can call you or text you.
Yeah.
I don't message anybody except like on Facebook. If I see a video I want to send you, I'm on Facebook, so it makes sense to send it within the app.
Sure.
But even then, half the time I text it to you. We're both on TikTok. I usually text you the TikTok link.
Yeah. 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 These are things that kids do that old people don't like. This says Gen X here. I don't understand the eyelash thing, where they're so long and fluffy that you look like Snuffleupagus. I also don't understand the nails that are so long you can't function. Like, how do you wipe your booty?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Listen, I mean, long nails is not a new thing. My mom, I mean, growing up, she used to have these insanely long, you know, always going to the pedicure, manicure, getting these long nails. And
yeah,
it's still commonplace nowadays. The eyelash thing, I do find a little weird / disingenuous. There was a woman I dated a few years ago. When I met her, I was like, oh, my God, look at these beautiful eyelashes. And then one falls off or something. Like, it's kind of gross that you're putting on fake eyelashes. And I have naturally long eyelashes, so maybe I don't have to compensate or something. But I do find it disingenuous. It's kind of like stuffing your bra. Like, you can be you. I just want to know what you are, though.
Sure. No, I get that. It is a huge thing, dude. I see a ton of people doing it. My niece will constantly say, you know, she gets her eyebrows, a lot of women do, sewn into their eyes like they don't have the, you know, maybe sewn in is the wrong word. They come off, but like after, they stick there for like 3 weeks, okay?
Yeah. Estheticians, they do that eyeball work. It reminds me of like Clockwork Orange where they're peeling people's eyes.
Yeah. But she has said many times, like, if she hasn't had her eyelashes, she'll be like, oh, I just don't feel like myself. And I'm like, well, this is yourself, dude. You know, it's kind of weird and sad, but, you know, I guess do you. I don't know.
To some extent, but I'm noticing a theme of being a little too, worried about someone's looks, so.
What about breast implants? Are they disingenuous to you because they're not real, or is that different?
No. I mean, I have always said to women, like, if you want that for your benefit, go ahead. I could care less. But if you're going to do it, then do it. Like, stuffing your bra is crazy. But if you make them permanently stuffed, then at least you're permanent. If you're going to tattoo on the eyebrow, like, okay, at least it's permanent. I don't need to find it on my bedroom floor.
What about shapewear? Does that bother you?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just really not fixated on that stuff. But my ex-wife wore Spanx all the time, made her feel better.
Yeah.
I always joked that she was, you know, putting on her superhero costume for the day.
Yeah.
Because she's got tights under her clothes like Spider-Man.
You know, guys are wearing that shapewear now.
Yeah, that I don't think I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Get a, be you.
Yeah, okay. Just be you, dude. Come on. This is a list of trends of younger people that old people think are annoying. I find many younger people to be very fearful, hyper-fixated on the worst possible outcomes, even though the actual chance is so low it's not worth worrying about. This new trend of being overly fearful about things. Do you notice it?
I notice it, but not as a new trend. I feel like that's a basic human nature kind of thing.
Were you overly fearful in your daily life growing up?
It depends what your definition of overly fearful. Like if you're constantly looking over your shoulder, constant paranoia, any mental health expert would tell you that's not healthy. But you and I have talked about future tripping a million times because my therapist gets on my case about that. So am I worrying about the worst case? No. But do I overly worry? Yeah. But I think that's human nature. I haven't noticed it being a new trend.
I have people in my life where I'll notice, and these are kids, where I'll notice like constant thoughts of like, hey, let's go get something to eat. Well, what if the food is going to make me sick? You know, being fearful of things like that, like, hey, let's go to the store, you know, or being fearful of something happening in the store. Like, that's overly fearful, don't you think?
I think that's paranoia.
Or anxiety.
Yeah. Either way, that can't be healthy.
Yeah.
No, I can't say that I've noticed it. But yeah, if anyone, any age, any generation, if you're overly paranoid and constantly worried, then you might want to talk to someone.
Yeah, I think that's right, dude, because that's no way to live, to be fearful all the time.
No.
So there you go. Is there anything that you're annoyed with that I didn't mention today?
Well, it's hard to prove a negative. I don't know what you didn't mention. So
if I did mention it, don't say it, but say anything else.
I'm very content with everything that's gone on.
Okay, good. Hey, let's remind folks, Stephen, that, yeah, we are on the Really American Media platform live on Fridays on YouTube, 3:30 Pacific time.
Check that out. Check out all the archived videos there, the other stuff we're up to. And yeah, we're on YouTube in general, our own page, TikTok, Reddit, Facebook. So look us up and get social, baby.
Call or comment line 844-48-VOCAL. It's the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
What up, player? It's your boy, Snoop. This has been a production of the Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. I'd much rather sip Nick and Steve than gin and juice. So roll yourself up a fatty and mentally process everything you just heard. It's all knowledge, son. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Have yourself a blessed day. Peace.